For 80 years, Ed Morse has built a legacy, and now it's time to celebrate. During the 80th anniversary sale at Ed Morse Sawgrass Auto Mall, big selection means volume savings on over 800 of your favorite Chevys, Buicks, GMCs, and Cadillacs. Shop four iconic brands under three rooftops with over 22 acres of GM inventory. It's a celebration 80 years in the making at Ed Morse Sawgrass Auto Mall. Visit EdMorseSawgrass.com, where you're always backed by Morse.
Bull Camper in the right place at the right time.
Joe Rose, touchdown Miami!
Joe, another Out to Pasture episode for us, and I think we got a good guy. Guy we've known for a long time. And
the best storyteller.
Yeah.
Of the Dolphins organization for such a long time.
And the only problem with him is that he can't tell a really good stories because he needs to protect some people that that need to be protected.
Not everybody is an ass clown openly you and I.
Yeah.
And
they don't keep their stuff
private. Yes.
Yeah. So with Stu Weinstein, he was with the NFL security, and then he became the first time we had security for the Miami Dolphins with Don Shula. In 84
and 34 years.
Mm-hmm. So this is a guy that if anything happens, something happens with a player, good, bad, or indifferent, he's the guy that gets the first call. And he's the guy that had the privilege of making that next call to Don Shula, Jimmy Johnson, Dave Wannstedt, Joe Philbin, and
a whole bunch of them
all down the road. But I gotta imagine the worst call was the ones to Coach Shula.
Oh, I can't imagine. And by the way, it's year-round.
Yeah.
Because our knuckleheads got in trouble during the season and the offseason. Yeah. And you get that call, somebody been arrested and out on the West Coast. Yeah. And there's Stu in the middle of it.
Yeah. And look, he's kind of become an ambassador for the Dolphins and Dolphins alumni. And so let's bring in Stu Weinstein. Stu, welcome to Out to Pasture. You know, we're all out there. We're all out to pasture right now. And we've been looking forward to having you on here. And let me give you a little review of him. You know, security office for the NFL, 73-84. You came to the Dolphins in 85, and you were through some good times with this football team, and the team was doing well, and a lot of stories, a lot of things happened under your watch. And so anybody that's looking for something that's really good, you got a lot of good stories to tell, and some that you probably can't tell.
Well, again, I've said this a million times. You know, I was blessed. I was blessed every day, 34 years, 24/7, to work with the Dolphins and with NFL security. And this is my seventh year volunteering with the alumni. And, you know, my history, I grew up, you could walk to my house and walk to my high school from the Hard Rock Stadium. I grew up in what's now called Miami Gardens. And, you know, I was a mediocre high school football player. I didn't play a lick. My junior year, I was on all the scout teams. My senior year, I played, but I rotated and, you know, I had no scholarship offers. And again, for me to have had this career was a blessing from God and from Jesus.
Stu, I always wonder, I always call him the most intimidating man I've ever been in my life by far, not even close since and even before. And Coach Shula, So you go to work for Coach Shula, and a lot of times, Stu, you had to be the guy that had to give him in season or out of season the bad news about something that was going on. As you're going in to give him that information, just tell me what that's like, knowing what the reaction from Coach Shula could be for you.
Well, you know, again, when I first started, he told me, he said, you know, I want to know everything that's going on. And you got to keep Joe Robbie informed because, you know, he's the one that's paying you. And I remember the first time I went in to give him some bad news, it was like I was the bad news. And as a matter of fact, it was in the morning. He had just come from Mass over at St. Thomas. So he's in there praying and he comes in. This is probably about maybe 8 o'clock, 8:15 in the morning. And I go in there with the bad news, and again, I'm hearing all these MFs, and like I said, when I walked out of there, I thought, well, maybe I was the one that created the bad news. And I got to say this. At first, I would try and defend myself or the person, you know, that I was bringing him the news for, but again, it was a waste of time. It was just a waste of time. I just lower my head and just nod and just take it.
So let me ask you this, Stu. Late at night, the phone rings, and which of the calls did you dislike most? The first one where you found out what was going on, or the second one where you had to send the message out to the old man?
Definitely the second one. The second one for sure. Now again, my first year, Bobby Monica and I both had to tell him one of your beloved teammates' wife got killed in a car accident on Ludlam Road, Charles right. Bowser. Oof. And Bobby actually got the call. And again, understand this. We didn't have any cell phones back then. The way you would get a hold of me was by my beeper. But for Bobby got the call, and he grabbed me, and we had to go tell, you know, Coach Shula about that, which obviously that's a lot worse than telling him about, you know, someone got arrested or someone is getting sued or you know, whatever. And I realized after that anything moving forward, I could put in perspective, because it certainly wasn't going to be as life changing as that was.
You know, Stu, I don't know if it was you or because I got here in 1980 and the drug thing is going on with cocaine all over South Florida and everywhere in the country. I thought Coach Shula's awareness of everything that was going on was truly amazing. Whether it was coming from you, detectives, police chiefs, he would come in meetings sometimes and make reference to clubs to stay out of it. And I was always amazed how on top of Dayton Brower, for a guy that was a coach, a head coach, and a really good one that was so focused on winning games, was aware of everything.
He was, again, I used to marvel watching him at practice when, you know, like during training camp, when you'd be going on both fields and he could be 100 yards away from something would see it. And it was the same thing off the field. I mean, where I would really get chewed out was if he did get a call from somebody else, and why wasn't I aware of it? And tell you a quick story. This was kind of humorous. It wasn't at the time, but I'm in my office. My office used to be behind the front desk at Nova. So I'm in my office, and it's in between practice and in between the meetings, and I'm taking a nap. And the door flies open. He comes in screaming at me, "Where's Tim Bowens?" And I said, I don't know. He said, "What do you mean you don't know? You're supposed to know." And it turned out Tim had been, they were pulling, they were like harassing Tim, they being his teammates. And he left. He ended up leaving. He was going to give his signing bonus back and go back to Mississippi. And so anyway, I was able to track him down with Drew Rosenhaus, and we got him to come back. And you know, I told the players, the two ringleaders of who the guys that were harassing him, that, you know, this isn't a guy you want to, but the point of all this is how am I supposed to know Tim Bowens? I mean, the parking lot, I'm not sitting out in the parking lot. I'm in my office and I'm supposed to know that the guy left. But that was, again, that was Coach Shula.
So when you came in toward the end of my career, Joe still had another couple of years going, but we had no security. I don't remember anybody doing what you did up until you got there. So there's kind of a new thing, certainly for the Dolphins, for all of us and for Coach Shula. So how did you figure out as you said, you grew up down here. So, and you were in the, you were associated with the police department, whatever, you know, with your career before. So you had a network, and for you to be a guy that was down here that lived here so long, that network had to be invaluable to you and invaluable for the team for what you were able to do.
No, that's absolutely. I never would have made it without that. When I signed on with the Dolphins, I think four teams had in-house security.
Yeah.
I think it was the Browns, the Cowboys, the Oilers, and the Packers. And I knew these guys from my role with NFL security. And what happened was, after Super Bowl 19, about a month later, I get a call from Coach Shula, and he said, "Can you come out to camp?" So I, you know, drove out there thinking, you know, this must be, he either wants me to do a background check for him or a player issue. And so when I get out there, he brought me in, and he said, "What would you think about, you know, switching teams and working directly for us?" And I said, "Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you guys were still there. You had the Killer Bees. You had Dan Marino, you had the Marx Brothers, you had Nat, you had Joe, Bruce Hardy, yeah. Dan John. I'm thinking, wow, this is great. I'm going to get a Super Bowl ring. So I said, well, is this going to be okay with Mr. Robbie? And he said, well, I'm going to run this by him. And as long as you don't ask for an exorbitant amount of money, which, you know, I didn't care about. I was single at the time. I didn't care about, I would have probably done it and paid them. So that's really what happened. And I just really, and I told Coach Yule, I said, I'm going to have to kind of carve my deal because I really don't know, you know, what I'm supposed to do, what I'm not supposed to do. And that's what I did. And the first guy I leaned on was Nat Moore. I knew Nat. I remember watching Nat. Nat was about 4 or 5 years behind me. He went to Edison and I went to Norland, but I knew who he was. So I kind of went to him and you know, kind of got an idea of you know, what was going on. Speaking of Nat, I'm sure you guys are aware of this. He's being rightfully honored both this Saturday night at the Jason Taylor Foundation and next Wednesday. He's actually having a street named after him, you know, both obviously well-earned.
Yeah. Yeah. He is. Hey, listen, you have to sell Nat Moore and how big a part of our life he has been and what he's done for both Bowen and myself. You got some classic stories that people love to hear if you don't mind. And a lot of it, intimidation, worried about coach when you were late and what can I say? And do I lie? Do I come clean? I'm going to get my ass chewed no matter what. But the Alfred Oglesby story is a classic, as you know. It goes right down tops in the NFL.
That's one of the best. You know what happened? He unfortunately, he's passed on, so he's not going to get mad about me telling the story. But what happened there was again, I'm getting reamed by Coach Shula because Oglesby's not at practice. He missed the morning practice. And I'm trying to find the guy. And I got a hold of Richmond Webb, who was his roommate. And who had lent, apparently Coach Shula decided to let the veterans go home maybe a week early. So Richmond had given Alfred his car and Richmond went home and Alfred was supposed to, you know, be following him home and never made it home. So now practice is over and still no Alfred. And of course, now I'm really getting yelled at by Coach Shula because again, my network isn't working. Finally, a couple of Miami-Dade detectives who were assigned to, you know, to find, you know, to help find Alfred found Richmond's car down in a real bad neighborhood down in Liberty City, just the car. So now we're really worried about, you know, we figured he'd gotten abducted and, you know, God knows. So, we found, again, they found the car and now the afternoon practice is over. And again, still no Alfred. I'm still getting yelled at. Around 5:30, Alfred shows up at camp, and his story is he had been abducted. He had been abducted at an ATM, had been driven out to the Everglades, and had been told to get out of the car and start walking. If he turned around, they were going to shoot him, and he did. He said he started walking, and so Harvey's in the room with us. Harvey Green, our Hall of Fame media relations guy, and of course Coach Shula's in there. So they want to do a press conference immediately. And I said, well, look, guys, the two detectives are on the way over here. Why don't we wait until Alfred talks to them? And I didn't want to say in front of Alfred, but I didn't believe his story. I grew up here. You could walk backwards from where he claimed they let him out in the Everglades and you'd have been back before 6 o'clock in the evening. I mean, there's just no way.
Yeah.
So they leave to go do this press conference. And I'm in there with Alfred. And I told him, I said, look, man, I said, you know, lying to me and lying to Coach Shula and lying to Harvey, that's one thing. You lie to these detectives, you're giving a sworn statement and they find out you're lying, you can go to jail. And he cracked. And, you know, he picked up two girls, the usual story, picked up two girls, went out drinking. The car stalled in Liberty City. Instead of calling for a tow truck, they left the car and went to the girls' apartment. And Alfred passed out and woke up at 5 o'clock and came over at 6. So I go running out thinking I'm going to, you know, be the hero and save the day. Well, unfortunately, the press conference was already done. Oh. And when I had to tell Coach Shula that this was all a bunch of, I mean, you talk about mad at me, at Harvey, at Alfred. So I said, well, you know, get the media back out here. And he said, oh, I'm not doing that. You do it. So Harvey and I had to go back out and tell the media that the whole thing was a hoax. The worst thing about it was, because of this, the Liberty about leaving camp early, was revoked. Yeah, the whole veteran team had to stay out there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about 10 minutes till 11 on the first night they have to stay back out there. I'm going out to check the rooms. And you know, it's kind of dark, you know, how it was. That it had that big tree in front. And I'm looking, and it looks like someone's tied to the tree. And it's Alfred. They had taped him to the tree. And I mean, frankly, if I hadn't cut him loose, he'd probably still be there. I mean, this was, what, 1992? Well, he'd probably still be out there.
That was a punishment back then. You did something like that. Yeah.
I'm not very mechanically inclined, and I was trying to use the thing you guys use, the tape cutter, but the tape was too thick. So I had to break in the cafeteria and get a steak knife and cut the poor guy loose. anyway, that was his punishment for, you know, for having the veterans have to stay another whatever it was.
You know how haywire that story went when I first heard
it. That was a great one.
When I first heard it, you know, they said Alfred claimed that he was abducted by an alien, is what I had heard. As it went on, you realize it wasn't that.
No, the story he told us, he said he pulled into the ATM, and he said it was two males. It had came up. They obviously had their own car, and they made Alfred drive. Actually, what I didn't say was they went to about two or three ATMs. I guess you could only take out a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
So he had to go to like two. He said it was like about $1,000.
Wow. Hey, did the ending of the story, was he on the team much longer? Was that just about it for him?
I think that was a year. I know that was a year we had picked up Chuck Klingbeil. We had who also passed, unfortunately. And we had Sean Lee, who also passed, unfortunately. And I think that Alfred was let go that year. And I think he ended up going maybe up to Green Bay.
Hey, Stu, I don't know how you can tell this. And if you can't, you can always take the fifth because you got so many great stories. I know a lot of them are top secret. The one guy that was constantly missed curfew or you caught after curfew, is there any one guy that's kind of top of that list that didn't do real well with the curfew thing and hoping that you would cover for him?
No, I got offered. I mean, I was offered money to cover by several players, but I explained to him. I said, look, I'm not looking to get you guys in trouble. Believe me. I said, but if I do cover, first of all, I'm not taking the money. I said, but if I do cover and it turns out you were out and I covered, obviously I'm not going to be out here anymore. I'm going to lose my credibility. But no, I mean, again, I can't think of anyone that, first of all, with Coach Shula, depending on who the player was, I mean, if a guy's missing curfew, you know, more than one time, he's probably not going to be with the Dolphins. And that actually happened. I'm not going to use the names, but that actually happened at an away game with the Cowboys where two guys broke curfew and they got caught and one guy got the biggest fine you could give, and the other guy got let go. Obviously, the one guy was a superstar starter, and the other guy was a backup guy.
That was a great job telling that story right there.
When Jimmy came in, Jimmy worked his fines a little different. What Jimmy would do is he would allow a player, if he wanted to pay in cash instead of it being payroll deducted, he would let him pay less money because he felt, by having to take the cash out of his pocket, the guy might think twice about, you know, going out again the second time.
So,
like I said, I mean, listen, cutting my teeth under Coach Shula is the best thing that could have happened to me.
Yeah.
Because after that, I mean, the other 9-10 coaches, the interim coaches, whatever, I was able to deal with because I'd already dealt with the guy that again was not only the best of all time, but was the hardest to deal with of all time. And, you know, it's funny. After he retired, our relationship became totally different. Renee and I would go over to visit him over in Indian Creek, or we'd see him at events. He would hug me and you want me to stay around. It was just a totally different relationship.
Yeah.
Probably for you guys.
I think we all had that.
You know, me too. I felt the same way.
At that time, you know, when you were playing for him, you were always on edge, right? I mean, you were always on edge. Yeah. I mean, from the start to finish and – as soon as you walked into training camp and as soon as you're in the meeting room, when you were anywhere near the football stuff, you were just on edge all the time because you didn't know what was coming. But then afterwards, he became a friend. I remember we used to do Touchdown Club, and he'd come all the time.
He's great.
And then I did some other stuff for him. And hey, can you come MC this? And really became a friend.
The other thing that really impressed me about him, I mean, you two guys were both, in my opinion, great football players. But you could be the 53rd guy on the team. And once you were done playing, if you needed something, legitimately needed something, yeah, he would make sure that it would get done. It wasn't just about the star players. It was about everybody on the team. And it didn't matter if you played the number of years you guys played, or Dan Marino playing 17 years, yeah, or a guy playing 1 year. I mean, he was there to help.
Hey, Stu, some other great stories I've really enjoyed and I love telling. I can't tell them. You were there for all of them. Don Johnson at the Orange Bowl, and during we had those great teams, and
you guys were both still there. This was the second Jets game, home game. We lost to them up there. I think it was like 23-7 on a Monday night, and we were 5-4. I mean, this was my first year, and this Super Bowl ring that I've already have sized, it's looking like we're not even going to get in the playoffs. So we're playing the Jets down here. And it's 150 degrees out. And at the end of the game, Dan threw a touchdown to Mark Duper. Right. Mark made a juggling catch, and we ended up beating them. I think it was 21-17. So we're in the locker room. And, of course, that Orange Bowl locker room wasn't the most it's not like the locker room the Dolphins are operating out of now. So we're in there, and you know, Coach Shula's sitting there. He's got a towel over his head. He hasn't even gotten changed yet. He did his media responsibility. And Bobby walks in with Don Johnson and, you know, brings him over and says, Coach, you know, I'd like you to meet Don Johnson with Miami Vice. So Coach Shula looks up at him and says, Don, you guys do a hell of a job out there. He says, keep up the good work. He said, you know, we appreciate the fact you keep us safe. And I'm looking at Bobby. Bobby's looking at me. Don Johnson's looking at both of us. And Bobby says, well, no, Coach, you don't understand. This is Don Johnson from Miami Vice. It's a TV show. He's an actor. And I'm at Sheridan House, and I can't use the language Coach Shula used, but basically told him, Monica, I know what an MF cop, a Vice cop does. And Don Johnson was crushed. I don't know if you guys knew him, but he was an egomaniac. And he kind of limped out of there with his head down. We go up after we're going up to pick up. Dorothy was still alive, obviously, back then. So we go up to get her. She's up in the, we took the elevator up to the top floor, and I'm telling her the story. And, you know, again, for the people that didn't know, you know, Miami Vice was probably what was on primetime on Friday night. And if it wasn't the most popular TV series in America, certainly it was in South Florida. So when I tell her the story, she starts looking at Coach Shula like, how can you not know? And he told her, he said, well, if you remember, sweetie, Friday night's our date night. So we're never home on Friday night. And she goes, yeah, we are. We get home, we go have dinner, and we're home by, I watch it. I watch the program. But he didn't. He had no idea who that was.
No idea. No. Hey, Stu, I got to ask you, you went through Hard Knocks, and it was just that, the Hard Knocks with Joe Philbin.
That was forced upon. I mean, obviously, as an employee, I had no choice, but that thing
what
that
was
ended
that
up
like?
Happening with, yeah, with the receiver was really, to me, I wish we hadn't, you know, done it because again, as he's leaving, he tells me that he's going to go out and get arrested. And I tell him, give me a call. I'll get you out. Yeah. And it was a night off. It was a scrimmage and a night off. And my wife and I are having dinner at Tropical Acres with two other couples, and I get the call that he'd been arrested. So, you know, that, again, I was hoping they would, you know, we had editing power, I thought, and I was hoping maybe they would edit that out, but they ended up not editing it out. And that was the end of the player's career.
Yeah, that Hard Knocks was a pain in the ass for everybody.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I didn't think we were prepared to have Hard Knocks at that point with that team. Did you kind of felt the same way?
And again, I that's something I don't think, obviously with Don Shula, there would have been no Hard Knocks.
And
Jimmy, I'm not sure about, but Don Shula for sure, there would have been, we wouldn't have done it.
Hey, Stu, you've been, you know, you've been inside the places where people don't go with him, but you've been around this team for such a long time, and you've seen a lot of things. What are your favorite moments that you've seen throughout? And probably most of them would probably fall back to either Coach Shuler or Jimmy Johnson because just of the era of that time and how good the teams were. Yeah. But boy, you've seen a lot of stuff that most people will never see.
Well, again, I signed on to do this. I wasn't planning on doing this for 34 years. I signed on to do this because I felt you guys, I mean, I'd gone to two Super Bowls with you, 17 and 19, as a member of NFL security. And obviously, I mean, the team was a good team. Even the in-between year that you didn't go when Seattle came down here and beat you, I mean, you certainly could have won that game. And it was not only just being around the team for that week at the Super Bowl, you know, I could see why the team was real good. It was a lot about Coach Shula and his coaching staff, but he had a lot of smart guys on the team. So I figured, you know, I'll get in here. We'll get a couple Super Bowl rings. And heck, my first year, we end up coming back from a deficit with the Browns. We beat them. And now we got the Patriots coming in here, who we had beaten about 3 weeks before down here. So I'm we've beaten the Bears. So I figured, shoot, this is my first year. This is great. I'm going to get a ring. So, and that's the only disappointing thing of the 34 years. I mean, like I said, I was blessed every day to walk in the door, you know, even the 1-15 season, that wasn't a real fun season for me, but 1-15 season. But again, I was still there. And the next year I think we ended up going 11-5. But honestly, of all the things that I equate with my 34 years, it's the relationships. Yeah. It's the relationships I was able to form that I've been able to maintain. You know, the alumni threw me a retirement party. And at the end of the evening, Nat and Honor Cruz, who was his go-to person back then, now it's Erica Simmons, they asked me if I'd be interested in volunteering. And I said, yeah, I said, that'd be great. And so I've been able to continue the process. But like I said, the relationships of, and again, being a mediocre high school football player and doing this for 34 years, I mean, it was a blessing.
Hey, Stu, I got to ask you, we talk so much even now on the radio, how important background checks are. I always wonder when you didn't have all that support when you first started and you wanted to get information before a draft, or how did you go about that? How difficult was it to get good information?
Yeah, well, again, Joe, I worked as a private, I have no law enforcement experience, but I worked as a private investigator for 17 years. And we part of what we would do, again, we work for the league and we would do background checks, and I became, you know, very familiar expertise, if you want to call it, with a public record search. And then once I got with the Dolphins, I was able to interview the guys. And fortunately, most of the players that I would research, and again, one year it was like 600 of them, I would have an interview with. And their agents would tell them, don't lie to this guy because he's going to find it out anyway, and then it's going to look bad for you. So that's really how I would get them done. I'm not saying we wouldn't necessarily take a guy that was a good player that might have had some issues off the field, but I know for a fact a couple of times if it came down to two guys and one guy had issues off the field and the other one didn't, they would take the guy that didn't have the issues.
Hey, Stu, so obviously our podcast is out to pasture. We're talking about aging and, you know, we're not getting any younger. And so let me just ask you this. What was, you know, as you're going on and you know, because you're traveling, you're on the field, you're moving in, you know, you've got all that stuff to do. Well, when did your first out to pasture moment where you felt like, wow, this is getting tough, or, you know, my back's bad? I know you know, we've all had, you know, you almost had injuries as much as us just from doing stuff you're doing. But, you know, your back, your knees, whatever. What started to kind of give you, some thoughts that, hey, this is kind of coming to an end here.
In 2016, I inherited non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah.
And I ended up going through 7 rounds of chemotherapy. And I told, Mike Tenenbaum was running the team then. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm turning 70 this year. And I said, you know, I probably have to start thinking about retiring. So we brought in Drew Brooks, who's done a great job, and, you know, he's replaced me. Larry Jarika now helps him. So I stayed on another like year and a half. And again, I, you know, now when I come home today from this, I'll probably take a nap. I mean, I don't have the energy I used to have. You know, fortunately, I've, again, been blessed by God and Jesus. I don't have the cancer anymore, but I do have stenosis, so I use a walker. And you know, with the demands of what a security guy needs to be able to do, I just couldn't do. I mean, the backgrounds and stuff I can still do, but not the physical, you know, the traveling. And matter of fact, they let me go on a trip. I guess it was my next to last year, 2017, we went up to Philadelphia to practice against the Eagles and then played them in a preseason game. And I was worn out. I mean, just from making that trip. And now I'm going to be, so I'm going to be 79 November 1st. And again, it's, you know, like for players, it's a young man's game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Stu, there's been a lot of other stories. I got to hit you with one more. You got to share the Alex Rodriguez story, roaming around camp early on.
Okay, that was our first year at Nova, and we really didn't – we moved in so late. You know, Brian Wiedmeyer is the one that really spearheaded the getting this facility ready. And we moved in so late, there was really no time to get an SOP. So it's after practice one day, and I'm coming in. I was going to meet Coach Shula outside. We're going to go for our noon jog. And I see these two kids, you know, young men walking around. And I just went up and asked them what they were doing. And you know, both of them started giving me attitude, like, you know, do you know who this is? And I didn't. I didn't know who it was. I guess Alex had been the number one draft pick.
Right. Baseball,
which,
yeah.
Again, I wasn't. Listen, as a kid, I was like you, Joe. I followed baseball. I could tell you every roster of every team, but no, not in 1993. So, again, I said, "Well, look, guys, let's go out to the lobby and talk about this." And they kept, you know, kept giving me attitude. So we finally walked outside, and not Alex, but the guy with him, turned out to be his cousin, jumped me from behind, like, you know, jumped on my back. And I, you know, quickly kind of rolled him off. And Mel Phillips was in the parking lot, our defensive backfield coach, and a tough guy, as you guys both know.
Oh, yeah.
He, you know, played safety for the 49ers for 10 years.
Yeah.
He comes running over and, you know, to kind of make sure that Rodriguez doesn't get into this. And so now Coach Shula walks outside and goes, you know, what the hell's going on out here? And it turned out one of the players had invited them to come out to practice.
Wow.
But they weren't supposed to be where they were. They were supposed to, you know, be in the VIP section and not wandering on through the building. So that ended up being my Alex Rodriguez story.
Yeah. Any punches thrown out there, Stu? Did you get a left in there or something?
No, the cousin, like I said, I rolled the cousin off and I was starting to work on him. But I was kind of watching Rodriguez too. But once Mel came over, Rodriguez didn't want any part of it. He just kind of stayed back and didn't, you know, he wasn't really interested in the, I don't know about me, but he wasn't interested in tangling with Mel.
Well, you talk about Mel. I just got to, you know, Joe and I grew up with Mel Phillips as a 49er. And the one thing, when I first saw Mel down here, I was so happy that they hired him as a coach. I said, Mel, I watched you play when you had two broken wrists and you played the entire season, didn't miss a game.
Well, let me tell you what else Mel did. And this is even more unbelievable. When he was in college, they had a sit-in. I think he went to North Carolina AT&T or something. Mm-hmm. And this was in the civil rights era where it wasn't real good to be involved in sit-ins. And, you know, Mel told me, he said, I went. I didn't care. I mean, again, that was not a man to trifle with.
No, he said it was good.
And I always think, he always talked about Jimmy Johnson. Bo and I, of course, grew up San Francisco 49er fans. So what was John Brody like and Gene Washington? And he was great.
No, I say Mel was, you know, you look at some of the guys that he coached and their careers. I mean, he was the best. I know they don't have a Hall of Fame for assistant coaches, but you know, him, Bill, the guy that you played under, Bill Arnsberger, John Sandusky. I mean, these guys, it's too bad. It's just too bad the NFL doesn't, you know, recognize those guys.
So for the better part of your career with the Dolphins, you were the only guy. Now I walk around there and they've got, you know, a dozen guys coming on the trips and they got them stationed on every floor in the front doors. And it's like, I mean, they brought like a whole police force. It seems like when you go on the road, even at home.
I actually got that role. And after that incident, I mentioned about the superstar and the backup player getting in trouble in Dallas. I went to Coach Shula and I went to the Robbies and I said, look, you know, what we're doing is we're hiring, we're asking hotel security to watch the player floors, because I can't stay up all night and yeah. you know, walk two floors. It's just not going to work. So I said, what would you guys think if I can, they'll do it nominally. It's not going to cost a lot of money. And I'm going to start bringing, and they said, fine, you know, whatever you yeah. want to do. And that's when, that's really 89, 90s when I started doing that. And like you said, now it's where, you know, again, it's a needed force. And then after 9/11, where we had to start screening everybody that was going yeah. on the trips and the LEOs, I call them LEOs. I mean, they were, you know, off duty police officers and guys that I knew and guys that I trusted. They started doing that. They started screening the passengers as per TSA requirements.
Hey, Stu, what was it like? International football starts, and all of a sudden your job is now even more getting guys ready, getting where everybody can travel across the ocean. What was that like?
Again, I understand it's a money thing, and I get it. And you know, for the Robbie family, for the Huizenga family, for Stephen Ross, money in their pocket, good for them. But that was not a fun off season to have to do, you know, passports. Yeah. For Mexico and Japan, we had to do visas, which is another story. And then, of course, you know, the week we're leaving, we're always bringing some guy in that doesn't have a passport that we have to, you know, facilitate. And just again, after 9/11, just the fear of traveling. I mean, it's bad enough having to go to New York, you know, let alone going overseas. But again, you know, it's part of the job. And that's where the Leos really, really came in to earn their kudos, because they were right there with us.
But as those trips have gone on, it's not only getting out of the country, but when you get over to wherever you're going, whether it's Frankfurt, whether it's, London, whether it's, you know, Madrid, or wherever they're going, you got to deal with their people over there getting your guys in to their country.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you another quick story. I mean, I can tell this story because it doesn't involve any, and I'm not hurting anybody, but when I went over, I used to have to go over for what they call a planning trip. I'd go with usually the operations guy. And when we went over to Tokyo, which was a great trip. I mean, they really took good care of us over there once we got there. But they had a guy come in from the, I guess the ambassador's office, some federal guy. And he told us, he said, this was 1991. And he said, you tell your guys now, the last thing they want to do is get arrested over here for drugs. He said, there's no due process. You sit in jail till you go to trial. He said, and the penalty can be up to 20 years. So I said, look, would you do me a favor? When we get here, we're going to have a meeting. We're going to have a team meeting. Would you come in and explain that to the guys? Because I know darn well some of the guys were bringing drugs, and that would have been, again, a total disaster, obviously, to have somebody arrested and have to stay over there. But again, the good part about the trips was NFL security got involved, who I had worked with, and they always made sure that it was going to be a doable trip. And the guy that's in charge of that now, the guy that I work with was Ed Dubois. The guy that's doing it now is Steve Cady, and Steve and I are best friends. In fact, I do part-time work for Steve's company, usually background checks. And they made sure that the trip is going to, you know, go as well as it can go. But again, you know, again, we as you guys both know, we just live in a different society now.
Stu, it's great having you on. I just want to – there's one thing I want to ask you about, your experience and your relationship with Coach Shula, which was a long relationship. Philadelphia, where he breaks the record.
Pretty cool.
That had to be one of the on-field moments that sticks with you pretty hard, huh?
No question about it. I mean, that was a great day. We were playing with about our fourth or fifth, you know, that's the year Dan went down.
Yeah.
Right.
Scott Mitchell took over. He went down. We ended up playing with, you know, Doug Peterson, who became a Super Bowl winning head coach. And I think we beat him like 19-13. But it was, you know, again, being part of that. I mean, being around Don Shula, when you think about that, I mean, and I'm hoping Bill Belichick has a successful career at the college level and doesn't come back to the NFL to beat the record. And I'm hoping Andy Reid, before he gets too close, he retires.
Yeah.
But again, that was that was definitely was a special day. And actually, you know, that year we ended up, if y'all remember, we were 9-2 and looked like we were on our way to the Super Bowl and unfortunately lost our last, five, six, seven games.
That's right. Stu, this has been great, man. Yeah. Can't thank you enough for coming on. You got so many great stories.
I'm always here with a lot of love for you guys. I appreciate what you guys do, not only when you were playing, but what you guys have done in the community.
Thanks, Stu. Yeah, right back at you. Yeah. We feel that way about you, Stu, for everything you do for everybody, bud. You've never stopped being a giver, man. Thank you.
For what you've done, I think you've certainly made a lot of friends along the way.
Absolutely.
That'll never forget you. And look, every time I see you, I'm happy to see you.
Hey, Stu, we got to keep you around a lot longer. You keep fighting, man.
Thank you both, and I'm looking forward to your steakhouse, Ken.
All right, we'll do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, a lot of stories. And Stu, like us, you know, Sevy's talking about when he's 79 years old, I think he's 80 or something now, or close to that, and still going, still participating, doing what he can do. And
so he stays active, and that's made the difference. Like he's really involved with the Dolphins, and he's sharp as can be.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't miss a beat on his stories from like 40 years ago, but it's good to have him still around the
team. And you know what? He texts us all the time.
Yeah.
Give the text and answer him back. And I think he's got a bunch of guys that he talks about with that.
Yeah.
So, good guy. And, just wish the best for him. And, I tell you, some of the things he's seen and some of the things that he's had to do was,
Can you imagine being here in the 80s, as crazy as it was here in South Florida, and we're all in the middle of it, right to the end of his career? He's seen it all.
Seen it all. All right, hope you guys have seen it all. Hope you keep seeing us here on Out to Pasture. You can catch us on all the platforms, all the podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeart, all those. You can catch us on YouTube. Like us, sponsor or subscribe to us, do all those things. And I keep telling you, you know, Joe, I think we're going to have a surprise next time. I keep telling about it. We're going to start doing some giveaways. I think I got something. I found the right item to give us the good giveaway that we wanted. So you're going to have to come back and check us out the next time.
Are you looking at me kind of funny the way you're doing that? Like I have something to do with it.
You did have something to do with it. and you'll find it. Look, you got to come back. If you want to hear how it happened, come back. Because knucklehead, I'm not going to call him knucklehead. But
getting old sucks, Bo.
It's not getting old. It's the vehicle that you use to get it started. But we'll do that next week. So, hey, next time we're on, you got to come and catch us out the pasture. Thanks for following us as much as you do. And we'll see you next time.